while it must look threatening to those watching, his hand is light as a breeze. I won't hurt you, but you can't let the fear take you. I drop my head and breathe deeply. The mask watches us now, his whole body still. We are a few yards from him, a few feet. I peek out at him through my hair. His attention passes quickly over Keenan, Izzy, and me. Then it lands on Elias. He stares. Skies. My body threatens to freeze again, but I make myself move. Elias nods at the mask, perfunctorily, unconcerned, and walks on. The mask is behind us, but I still sense him watching, poised to strike. Then I hear the boots marching away, and when I look back, he's moved on. I release a breath I didn't realize I was holding. Safe. You're safe. For now. It's only as we approach an encampment on the southeast side of Nur that Elias finally seems to relax. Head down, Maya, Elias whispers. We're here. The encampment is enormous. Balconied, sand-colored houses line its edges, and in the space before them sits a city of gold and green tents. The market is the size of any in Sarah, perhaps even larger. All the stalls have the same emerald draping patterned with glinting fall leaves. Skies knows how much such brocade costs. Whatever tribe this is, it is powerful. Tribal men in green robes encircle the camp, funneling those entering through a makeshift gate made of two wagons. None approach until we enter the domicile area, swarming with men tending cook fires, women preparing goods, children chasing chickens and each other. Elias approaches the largest of the tents, bristling when two guards stop us.
"Slavers trade at night,"
one of them says in accented Saren.
"Return later."
Athia Arana is expecting me,
Elias growls, and at the sound of the name I start, thinking back to weeks ago, to the small, dark-eyed woman in Spiro's shop, the same woman who danced so gracefully with Elias on the night of the Moon Festival. This is who he trusts to take us north? I remember what Spiro said.
One of the most dangerous women in the Empire. She sees no slavers in the day.
The other tribesman is emphatic.
As night, only. If you don't let me in to see her, Elias says, I'm happy to inform the masks that Tribe Nur is backing out of trade agreements.
The tribesmen exchange an uneasy glance, and one disappears into the tent. I want to warn Elias about Athia, about what Spiro said. But the other guard watches us so carefully that I cannot do it without him seeing. After only a minute, the tribesman waves us into the tent. Elias turns to me as if he's adjusting my manacles, but instead he palms me the key. He strides through the tent flaps as if he owns the encampment. Izzy, Keenan, and I hurry to follow. The inside of the tent is strewn with hand-woven rugs. A dozen colored lamps cast geometric patterns over silk-encased pillows. Athia Arana, exquisite and dark-skinned, with black and red braids spilling down her shoulders, sits behind a rough-hewn desk. It is heavy and out of place amid the dazzling wealth around her. Her fingers click the beads of a counting frame, and she inks her findings into a book in front of her. A bored-looking boy about Izzy's age, and with Athia's same sharp beauty, sits beside her.
"I only allowed you inside, slaver," Athia says without looking at us. "So I could personally tell you that if you ever step foot in my camp again, I'll gut you myself."
"I'm hurt, Athia," Elias says as something small spins from his hand and into Athia's lap. "You're not nearly as friendly as the first time we met."
Elias's voice is smooth, suggestive, and my face heats. Athia snatches the coin. Her jaw drops when Elias removes his face scarf.
"Gibran,"
she says to the boy, but quick as a flame, Elias draws his sims from across his back and steps forward. He has a blade at each of their throats, his eyes calm and terrifyingly flat.
"You owe me a favor, Athia Arana," he says. "I'm here to collect." The boy, Jabran, looks uncertainly at Afia.
Let Jabran sit outside.
Afia's tone is reasonable, even gentle, but her hands curl into fists atop her desk. He has nothing to do with this.
We need a witness from your tribe when you grant my favor, Elias says. Jabran will do nicely.
Afia opens her mouth, but says nothing, apparently flabbergasted, and Elias goes on.
You're honor-bound to hear my request, Afia Ara-Nur, and honor-bound to grant it.
Honor be damned.
Fascinating, Elias says. How would your council of elders feel about that? The only Zaldara in the tribal lands, the youngest ever chosen, casting away her honor like bad grain.
He nods at the elaborate geometric tattoo peeking out of her sleeve, an indication of her rank, no doubt.
A half hour in a tavern this morning told me all I needed to know about Tribe Nur, Afia. Your position isn't secure.
Afia's lips thin to a hard line. Elias has hit a nerve.
The elders would understand that it was for the good of the tribe.
No,
Elias says.
They'd say you're not fit to lead if you make errors in judgment that threaten the tribe. Errors like giving a favor coin to a marshal.
That favor was for the future emperor.
Afia's anger propels her to her feet. Elias digs his blade deeper into her neck. The tribeswoman doesn't appear to notice.
Not a traitor fugitive who, apparently, has become a slaver.
They're not slaves.
I take out the key and unlock my manacles, and then Izzy's and Keenan's, to drive home Elias's point.
They're companions, he says. They're part of my favor.
She won't agree, Keenan whispers to me under his breath. She's going to sell us out to the bleeding marshals.
I've never felt so exposed. Afia could shout a word, and within minutes there would be soldiers all over us. Beside me, Izzy tenses. I grab her hand and squeeze.
We have to trust Elias,
I whisper, trying to reassure her as much as myself. He knows what he's doing. All the same, I feel for my dagger hidden beneath my cloak. If Afia does betray us, I will not go down without a fight.
Afia, Jabran swallows nervously, eyeing the blade at his throat. Perhaps we should hear him out.
Perhaps, Afia says through clenched teeth, you should keep your mouth shut about things you don't understand, and stick to seducing Zoldar's daughters.
She turns to Elias.
Drop your blades and tell me what you want, and why. No explanation from you means no favor from me. I don't care what you threaten me with.
Elias ignores the first order.
I want you to personally escort my companions and me safely out of Nur and to Koff Prison, before the winter snows, and, once there, aid us in our attempts to break Lyre's brother Darin out of the prison.
What in the skies? Just days ago he told Keenan we didn't need anyone else. Now he's trying to pull in Afia. Even if we did reach the prison intact, she'd turn us over the second we arrived, and we'd disappear into Koff forever.
That's about 300 favors in one, you bastard.
A favor coin is whatever can be requested in a breath.
I know what the bleeding favor coin is.
Afia drums her fingers on her desk and turns to me, as if noticing me for the first time.
Spiro Tullaman's little friend, she says. I know who your brother is, girl. Spiro told me. And a few others, too. From the way the rumors have spread. Everyone whispers of the scholar who knows the secrets of Seric Steel.
Spiro started the rumors. Afia sighs and speaks slowly, as if dealing with a small, irritating child.
Spiro wanted the Empire to believe your brother passed his knowledge to other scholars. Until the marshals get names from Darin, they'll keep him alive. Besides, Spiro always was one for foolish tales of heroism. He's probably hoping that this stirs up the scholars.
gives them a bit of backbone.
Even your ally is helping us, Elias says. More reason for you to do the same.
My ally has disappeared, Afia says. No one's seen him for weeks. I'm certain the Marshals have him, and I have no wish to share the same fate.
She lifts her chin to Elias.
If I reject your offer?
You didn't get to where you are by breaking promises. Elias drops his slims. Grant my favor, Afia. Fighting it is a waste of time.
I cannot decide this alone, Afia says. I need to speak with some of my tribe. We'd need at least a few others with us, for appearances' sake.
In that case, your brother stays here, Elias says, as does the coin. Gibran opens his mouth to protest, but Afia just shakes her head.
Get them food and drink, brother, she sniffs, and baths. Don't take your eyes off them.
She glides past us and through the tent flaps, saying something in Sardis to the guards outside, and we are left to wait.
Chapter 18. Elias. Hours later, with evening deepening into night, Afia finally pushes through the tent flaps. Gibran, his feet up on his sister's desk as he flirts shamelessly with both Izzy and Lyra, jumps up when she enters, like a soldier frightened of a superior officer's censure. Afia eyes Izzy and Lyra, scrubbed clean and clad in flowing green tribal dresses. They sit close to each other in a corner, Izzy's head on Lyra's shoulder as they whisper back and forth. The blonde girl's bandage is gone, but she blinks gingerly, her eye still red from the scouring it got in the storm. Keenan and I wear the dark pants and sleeveless hooded vests common in the tribal lands, and Afia nods approvingly.
At least you don't look, or smell, like barbarians anymore. You have been given food? Drink?
We got everything we needed. Thank you, I say. Other than the one thing we need most, of course, which is the reassurance that she won't turn us over to the Marshals. You're her guest, Elias. Don't irritate her. Well, I amend, almost everything. Afia's smile is a flash of light, blinding as the sun glinting off a cheaply gilded tribal wagon.
I grant your favor, Elias Veturius, she says. I will escort you safely to Kov Prison before the winter snows, and, once there, aid you in your attempt to break Lyra's brother Darin out of the prison in any way you require.
I eye her warily. But, Afia's mouth hardens,
I won't put the burden on my tribe alone.
Enter!
She calls in Sardis, and another figure comes through the tent flaps. She is dark-skinned and plump, with full cheeks and long-lashed black eyes. She speaks, her voice a song.
We bid farewell, but 'twas not true, for when I think your name...
I know the poem well. She sang it sometimes when I was a boy and couldn't sleep. You stand with me in memory, I say, until I see you again. The woman opens her hands outward, a tentative offering.
Elias, she whispers. My son, it has been too long.
For the first 6 years of my life, after Keris Veturia abandoned me in Mamie Rila's tent, the Kihani raised me as her own son. My adoptive mother looks exactly as she did the last time I saw her, 6.5 years ago, when I was a fiver. Though she is shorter than me, her embrace is like a warm blanket, and I fall into it, a boy again, safe in the Kihani's arms. Then I realize what her presence here means, and what Afia has done. I release Mamie in advance on the tribeswoman, my rage building at the smug look on her face. How dare you bring Tribe Saif into this?
How dare you endanger Tribe Noor by foisting your favor upon me?
You're a smuggler. Getting us north doesn't endanger your tribe. Not if you're careful.
You're a fugitive of the Empire. If my tribe is caught helping you, the marshals will destroy us.
Afia's smile is gone now, and she is the shrewd woman who recognized me at the Moon Festival, the ruthless leader who has brought a once-forgotten tribe to glory with remarkable swiftness.
You put me in an impossible situation, Elias Veturius. I'm returning the favor. Besides, while I might be able to safely smuggle you north, I cannot get you out of a city with a full martial cordon around it. Kihani Rila has offered to help.
Of course she has. Mamie would do anything for me if she thought I needed aid. But I won't see anyone else I care about hurt because of me. I find that my face is inches from Afia's. I glare into her dark, steely eyes, my skin hot with wrath. At Mamie's hand on my arm, I step back. Tribe Saif is not helping us. I wheel on Mamie. Because that would be idiotic and dangerous.
Afia Jan,
Mamie uses the Sadi's term of endearment.
I would speak with my impertinent son alone. Why not prepare your other guests?
Afia gives Mamie a respectful half-bow, aware at least of my adopted mother's stature among her people, before gesturing Gibran, Izzy, Laya and Keenan out of the tent. Laya looks back at me, brow furrowed, before disappearing with Afia. When I turn to Mamie Rila, she's eyeing Laya and grinning.
Good heaps, Mamie says. You'll have many children. But can she make you laugh?
Mamie waggles her eyebrows.
I know plenty of girls in the tribe who...
Mamie. I recognize an attempt at distraction when I see it.
You shouldn't be here. You need to get back to the wagons as soon as you can.
Were you followed? If...
Shoosh.
Mamie waves me quiet and settles onto one of Afia's divans, patting the seat next to her. When I don't join her, her nostrils flare.
You might be bigger than you were, Ilyas, but you are still my son, and when I tell you to sit, you sit. Skies, boy.
She pinches my arm when I comply.
What have you been eating? Grass?
She shakes her head, her tone serious now.
What happened to you in Sarah these last weeks, my love? The things I've heard.
I've locked the trials deep within. I've not spoken of them since the night I spent with Lye in my quarters at Blackcliff. It doesn't matter, I begin.
It has changed you, Ilyas. It does matter.
Her round face is filled with love. It will be filled with horror if she knows what I did. This will hurt her far more than the marshals ever could.
Always so afraid of the darkness within.
Mamie takes my hands.
Don't you see? So long as you fight the darkness, you stand in the light.
It's not that simple, I want to shout. I'm not the boy I was. I'm something else. Something that will sicken you.
Do you think I don't know what they teach you at that school?
Mamie asks.
You must believe I am a fool. Tell me. Unburden yourself.
I don't want to hurt you. I don't want anyone else hurt because of me.
Children are born to break their mother's hearts, my boy. Tell me.
My mind orders me to stay silent, but my heart screams to be heard. She is asking, after all. She wants to know, and I want to tell her. I want her to know what I am. so I speak. When I finish, Mamie is quiet. The only thing I haven't told her is the true nature of the Commandant's poison.
What a fool I was,
Mamie whispers.
To think that when your mother left you to die, you would be spared from the Marshal's evil.
But my mother didn't leave me to die, did she? I learned the truth from the Commandant the night before I was to be executed. She had not abandoned me to the vultures. Caris Faturia held me, fed me, and then carried me to Mamie's tent after I was born. It was my mother's last, her only, kindness to me. I nearly say as much to Mamie, but the sorrow on her face stops me. It doesn't make a difference now, anyway.
Ah, my boy.
Mamie sighs, and I'm certain I've put more lines on her face.
My Elias.
Ilias, I say. For you, I'm Ilias. She shakes her head.
Ilias is the boy you were, she says. Elias is the man you have become. Tell me, why must you help this girl? Why not let her go with the rebel, while you remain here with your family? Do you think we cannot protect you from the marshals? None in our tribe would dare betray you. You are my son, and your uncle is the Zaldar.
You've heard the rumors of a scholar who can forge Sarek steel. Mamie nods warily. Those stories are true, I say. The scholar is Lya's brother. If I can break him out of Koth, think of what it could mean for the scholars. For Marin, for the tribes. 10 hells, you could finally fight the Empire. The tent flap bursts open, and Afia enters, Lya trailing and heavily hooded.
Forgive me, Kihani, she says, but it's time to move. Someone told the marshals you entered the camp, and they wish to speak with you. They'll likely intercept you on the way out. I don't know if they will ask questions and release me.
Mamie Rila stands, shaking out her robes, her chin high.
I will not allow a delay.
She closes on Afia until inches separate them. Afia rocks very slightly on her heels.
Afia Aranur, Mamie says softly, you will hold your vow. Tribe Scythe has promised to do its part in assisting you. But if you betray my son for the bounty, or if any of your people do, we will consider it an act of war, and we will curse the blood of 7 generations before our vengeance is spent.
Afia's eyes widen at the depth of the threat, but she merely nods. Mamie turns to me, rises on her tiptoes, and kisses my forehead. Will I see her again? Feel the warmth of her hands? Find comfort I don't deserve in the forgiveness of her eyes? I will. Though there won't be much to see, if, in trying to save me, she incurs the Marshal's wrath.
Don't do this, Mamie,
I plead with her.
Whatever it is you're planning, don't. Think of Sean and Tribe Scythe. You are their Kihani. They can't lose you. I don't want... We had you for 6 years, Elias, Mamie says. We played with you, held you, watched your first steps, and heard your first words. We loved you. And then they took you from us. They hurt you, made you suffer, made you kill. I don't care what your blood is. You are a boy of the tribes, and you were taken. And we did nothing. Tribe Scythe must do this. I must do this. I have waited 14 years to do this. Neither you nor anyone else will take it from me.
Mamie sweeps out, and as she does, Afia jerks her head toward the back of her tent.
Move, she says, and keep your faces hidden, even from my tribe. Only Mamie, Gibran, and I know who you are, and that's how it needs to stay until we're out of the city. You and Lyra will stay with me. Gibran has already taken Keenan and Izzy.
Where? I say. Where are we going?
The storyteller's stage, Veturius.
Afia arches a brow at me.
The Kihani is going to save you with a story.
Chapter 19. Helene. The city of Ner feels like a damned powder keg. It's as if every martial soldier I've released into the streets is a charge waiting to be lit. Despite threats to the men of public whippings and reductions in rank, they've had a dozen altercations with the tribesmen already. No doubt more are coming. The tribesmen's objection to our presence is ridiculous. They were happy enough to have Empire support in battling barbarian pirate frigates along the coast. But come into a tribal city looking for a criminal, and it's as if we've unleashed a djinn horde upon them. I pace the rooftop balcony of the martial garrison on the western side of the city, looking down at the teeming market below. Elias could be bleeding anywhere. If he's here at all. The possibility that I'm wrong, that Elias has slipped south while I've been wasting time in Ner, offers a strange sort of relief. If he's not here, I can't catch him or kill him. He's here, and you must find him. But since arriving at the garrison, at Atella's Gap, everything has gone wrong. The outpost was undermanned. I had to scrape reserve soldiers from surrounding guard posts in order to muster a force large enough to search Ner. When I arrived at the oasis, I found the force here depleted as well, with no information about where the rest of the men were sent. All told, I have 1,000 men, mostly orcs, and 12 masks. It's not nearly enough to search a city swollen to 100,000. It's all I can do to maintain a cordon around the oasis, so no wagon leaves without a search. Bloodshrike! Farris's blonde head pops up from the stairwell leading into the garrison. We've got her. She's in a cell. I suppress my dread as Farris and I head down a narrow flight of stairs to the dungeon. When I last saw Mamie Reela, I was a gangly, maskless 14-year-old. Elias and I stayed with Tribe Scythe for 2 weeks on our way back to Blackcliff after finishing out our years as fivers. And though, as a fiver, I was essentially a martial spy, Mamie had only ever treated me with kindness. And I'm about to repay her with an interrogation.
She entered the Ner encampment 3 hours ago, Farris says. Dex nabbed her on the way out. The fiver assigned to follow her says she visited 12 tribes today.
Get me intelligence on those tribes, I tell Farris. Sizes, alliances, trade routes, everything.
Harper is speaking to our fiver spies now.
Harper. I wonder what Elias would make of the Northmen. Eerie as the 10 Hells, I imagine him saying. Less chatty, too. I can hear my friend in my head. That familiar baritone that thrilled and calmed me at the same time. Would that Elias and I were here together, hunting some mariner spy or barbarian assassin. His name is Veturius, I remind myself for the 1,000th time, and he is a traitor. In the dungeon, Dex stands with his back to the cell, his jaw tight. Since he too spent time with Tribe Scythe as a fiver, I'm surprised at the tension in his body.
Watch it with her, he says under his breath. She's up to something.
Within the cell, Mamie sits on the lone, hard bunk, as if it is a throne. Her back rigid, chin up, one long-fingered hand holding her robes off the floor. She rises when I enter, but I wave her back down. Helene, my love.
You will address the commander as Bloodshrike, Kihani,
Dex says quietly as he gives me a pointed look. Kihani, I say, do you know the whereabouts of Elias Veturius? She looks me up and down, her disappointment obvious. This is the woman who gave me herbs to slow my moon cycle, so it wasn't hell to deal with at Blackcliff. The woman who told me, without an ounce of irony, that on the day I married she would slaughter 100 goats in my honour, and make a Kihani's tale of my life. "I'd heard you were hunting him," she says. "I've seen your child's spies, but I didn't believe it. Answer the question. How can you hunt a boy who was your closest companion only weeks ago? He is your friend, Hel... Bloodshrike. Your shield brother. He is a fugitive and a criminal." I pull my hands behind my back and knot my fingers together, twisting the Bloodshrike ring round and round. "And he will face justice, like other criminals. Are you harboring him?" "I am not." When I don't break eye contact, she breathes in through her nostrils, hackles rising. "You have taken salt and water at my table, Bloodshrike." The muscles of her hands are rigid as she clenches the edge of the bunk. "I would not insult you with a lie. But you would hide the truth. There's a difference. Even if I am harboring him, what can you do about it? Fight all of Tribe Scythe? You'd have to kill every last one of us. One man isn't worth a tribe, but he was worth an empire." Mamie leans forward, her dark eyes fierce, her braids falling into her face. "He was worth your freedom." How in the bleeding skies would you know that I traded my freedom for Elias's life? The retort hovers on my lips, but retreats as my training kicks in. Weaklings try to fill silence. A mask uses it to his advantage. I cross my arms, waiting for her to say more. "You gave up much for Elias." Mamie's nostrils flare, and she stands, smaller than me by a few inches, but towering in her rage. "Why should I not give up my life for his? He is my son. What claim do you have on him?" "Only 14 years of friendship, and a trampled heart." But that doesn't matter, because in her anger, Mamie has given me what I need. For how could she know what I gave up for Elias? Even if she heard tales of the trials, she couldn't know what I sacrificed for him. Not unless he told her. Which means she's seen him. "Dex, escort her upstairs." I signal to him behind her back. "Follow her." He nods and escorts her out. I trail him and find Harper and Farris awaiting me in the garrison's Blackguard barracks.
"That wasn't an interrogation," Farris growls. "It was a bleeding high tea. What in the hells could you have possibly gotten out of that?"
"You're supposed to be herding fivers, Farris, not eavesdropping." "Harper is a corrupting influence." Farris nods at the dark-haired man, who shrugs at my glare. "Elias is here," I say. "Mamie let something slip."
"The comment about your freedom," Harper murmurs.
His assertion unnerves me. I hate how he always seems to hit the nail on the head. The gathering is nearly over. The tribes will begin leaving the city after dawn breaks. If Tribe Scythe is going to get him out, that's when they'll do it. And he has to get out. He won't risk staying and being spotted, not with the bounty so high. A knock sounds on the door. Farris opens it to a fiver dressed in tribal clothes, his skin stained with sand.
"Fiver Melius reporting, sir."
He salutes smartly.
"Lieutenant Dex Atreus sent me, Bloodshrike. The Kihani you interrogated is heading to the storyteller's stage on the eastern edge of the city. The rest of Tribe Scythe are on their way there too. Lieutenant Atreus said to come quickly, and to bring back up." "The farewell tale." Farris grabs my sims from the wall and hands them over.
"It's the last event before the tribes leave. And thousands come out for it," Harper says. "Good place to hide a fugitive."
"Farris, reinforce the cordon." We plunge into the packed streets outside the garrison.
Call in all the squads on patrol. No one gets out of Nur without going through a marshal checkpoint. Harper, with me. We make our way east, following the crowd streaming toward the storyteller's stage. Our presence among the tribesmen is noted, and not with a reluctant tolerance I'm accustomed to. As we pass, I hear more than one insult muttered. Harper and I exchange a glance, and he signals the squads we run into, until we have 2 dozen auxiliary troops at our backs.
Tell me, Bloodshrike, Harper says as we near the stage. Do you really think you can take him?
I've beaten Veturius in combat 100 times. I don't mean can you take him down. I mean when the moment comes. Will you be able to put him in chains and take him to the Emperor, knowing what will happen?
No. Bleeding, burning skies, no. I've asked myself the same thing 100 times. Will I do right by the Empire? Will I do right by my people?
I cannot object to Harper asking the question, but my answer comes out as a snarl anyway. I suppose we'll find out, won't we? Ahead, the storyteller's theatre sits at the bottom of a steep, terraced bowl, and it's aglow with hundreds of oil lamps. A thoroughfare runs behind the stage, and beyond that, a vast depot filled with the wagons of those who will leave directly after the farewell tale. The air crackles with expectation, a sense of waiting that has me clutching my sim with a white-knuckled grip. What is going on? By the time Harper and I arrive, thousands of people pack the theatre. I see immediately why Dex needed backup. The ball has more than 2 dozen entrances, with tribesmen flowing in and out freely. I deploy the orcs I've gathered to each gateway. Moments later, Dex finds me. Sweat pours down his face, and blood streaks the brown skin of his forearms.
Mimi's got something up her sleeve, he says. Every tribe she met with is here. The orcs I brought with me have already gotten into 12 fights.
Bloodshrike, Harper points to the stage, which is surrounded by 50 fully armed men of Tribe Scythe. Look. The Scythe warriors shift to let a proud figure through. Mamie Reela. She takes the stage, and the crowd shushes each other. When she raises her hands, any lingering whispers are silenced. Not even children make a sound. I can hear the wind blowing off the desert. The Commandant's presence prompted a similar silence. Mamie, however, seems to elicit it out of respect instead of fear.
Welcome, brothers and sisters.
Mamie's voice echoes up the terraced bowl. I silently thank the language centurion at Blackcliff, who spent 6 years teaching us Sardhese.
The Kihani turns to the darkened desert behind her. The sun will soon rise on a new day, and we must bid each other farewell. But I offer you a tale to take with you into the sands on your next journey. A tale kept vaulted and locked. A tale that you will all be a part of. A tale still being told. Let me tell you of Ilias Unsaif, my son, who was stolen from Tribe Scythe by the Dread Marshals.
Harper, Dex and I haven't gone unnoticed, nor have the Marshals guarding the exits. Hisses and ululations erupt from the crowd, all directed at us. Some of the orcs move as if to draw their weapons, but Dex signals a halt. 3 masks and 2 squads of orcs against 20,000 tribesmen isn't a fight. It's a death sentence.
What is she doing? Dex says under his breath. Why would she tell Elias's story?
He was a quiet, grey-eyed infant, Mamie says in Sardhese. Left to die in the swelter of the tribal desert. What travesty to see such a beautiful, strong child abandoned by his depraved mother and exposed to the elements. I claimed him as my own, brothers and sisters, and took great pride in doing so, for he came to me in a time of great need, when my soul searched for meaning and found none. In the eyes of this child I found solace, and in his laughter I found joy. but it was not to last. I already see Mamie's Kihani magic working on the crowd. She tells of a child beloved by the tribe, a child of the tribe, as if Elias's martial blood is incidental. She tells of his youth, and of the night he was taken. For a moment, I too find myself riveted. My curiosity transforms into wariness when Mamie turns to the trials. She tells of the augurs and their predictions. She speaks of the violence the Empire perpetrated upon Elias's mind and body. The crowd listens, their emotions rising and falling with Mamie's: shock, sympathy, disgust, terror, anger. And that is when I finally understand what Mamie Rila is doing. She is starting a riot.
Chapter 20. Liar. Mamie's powerful voice echoes across the theater, mesmerizing all who hear it. Though I cannot understand Sardis, the movements of her body and her hands, along with the way Elias's face pales, tell me that this tale is about him. We have found seats about halfway up the terraces of the Storyteller's Theatre. I sit between Elias and Afia amid a crowd of men and women from Tribe Nur. Keenan and Izzy wait with Gibran, a dozen or so yards away. I catch Keenan craning his neck, trying to make sure I'm all right, and I wave to him. His dark eyes drift to Elias and back to me, before Izzy whispers something to him, and he looks away. In the green and gold clothes Afia gave all of us, we are, at a distance, indistinguishable from the other members of the tribe. I retreat further into my hood, thankful for the rising winds. Nearly everyone has their hoods up, or cloth over their faces, to protect themselves from the choking dust. "We can't take you directly to the wagons," Afia said as we joined her tribe in walking to the theatre. "There are soldiers patrolling the depot, and they're stopping everyone. So Mamie's going to create a little distraction." As Mamie's story takes a surprising turn, the crowd gasps, and Elias looks pained. To have one's life story told to so many would be strange enough, but a story with so much suffering, so much death. I take his hand, and he tenses, as if to pull away, but then relaxes. "Don't listen," I say. "Look at me instead." Reluctantly, he lifts his eyes. The intensity of his pale gaze makes my heart stutter, but I don't let myself look away. There's a loneliness to him that makes me ache. He's dying. He knows it. Perhaps life does not get more lonely than that. Right now, all I want is for that loneliness to fade, even if it's for a moment. So I do what Darren used to when he wanted to cheer me up, and I make an absurd face. Elias stares at me in surprise before cracking a grin that lights him up, and then he makes a ridiculous face of his own. I snicker, and I'm about to challenge him when I spot Keenan watching us, his eyes flat with suppressed fury. Elias follows my gaze. "I don't think he likes me." "He doesn't like anyone at first," I say. "When he met me, he threatened to kill me and stuff me in a crypt."
"Charming."
"He changed. Quite a lot, actually. I would have thought it impossible, but..." I wince as Afia elbows me.
"It's beginning."
Elias's smile fades as, around us, the tribesmen begin to whisper. He eyes the marshals stationed at the theatre exits nearest us. Most have hands on their weapons, and they watch the crowd dubiously, as if it will rise up and devour them. Mamie's gestures grow expansive and violent. The crowd bristles and seems to expand, pushing against the walls of the theatre. Tension fills the air, spreads an invisible flame that transforms all who come into contact with it. In seconds, whispers become angry mutters. Afia smiles. Mamie points to the crowd, the conviction in her voice raising goosebumps on my arms.
"Kisana kethia, kejahani deka."
Elias leans toward me, his words quiet in my ear.
who has suffered the tyranny of the Empire. He translates.
Huma!
We have.
Kisana Bijaya Kegima Baza!
Who has seen children torn from their parents' arms.
Huma!
A few rows down from us, a man rises and gestures at a knot of marshals I didn't notice. One of them has pale skin and a crown of blonde braids. Helene Aquila. The man bellows something at them.
Chara! Herithada!
Across the bowl, a tribeswoman stands and shouts those same words. Another woman rises to her feet at the base of the theater. She is soon joined by a deep voice yards away from us. Suddenly, the two words echo back and forth from every mouth, and the crowd transforms from spellbound to violent, as quick as a pitch-soaked torch catching flame.
Chara! Herizada!
Thieves, Elias translates, his voice flat. Monsters. Tribe Ner rises to their feet around Elias and me, shouting abuse at the marshals, raising their voices to join thousands of other tribesmen doing the same. I think back to the marshals tearing through the tribal marketplace yesterday, and I understand, finally, that this explosive rage is not just about Elias. It has been present in Ner all along. Mamie just harnessed it. I always thought the tribesmen were allied with the marshals, however reluctantly. Perhaps I was wrong.
Stay with me now.
Afia rises, her eyes darting from entrance to entrance. We follow, straining to hear her voice above the baying crowd.
When first blood is shed, we head for the nearest exit. Nurse wagons wait in the depot. A dozen other tribes will leave at the same time, and that should trigger the rest of the tribes into leaving too.
How will we know when? A blood-curdling howl cracks the air. I stand on tiptoe to see that at one of the exits far below us, a martial soldier has cut down a tribesman who got too close. The tribesman's blood seeps into the sands of the theater, and the shriek comes again, from an older woman kneeling over him, her body shuddering. Afia wastes no time. As one, Tribe Ner rushes to the closest exit. Quite suddenly, I cannot breathe. The crowd presses in close, surging, pushing, going in too many directions. I lose sight of Afia and spin toward Elias. He grabs my hand and pulls me near, but there are too many people, and we are wrenched apart. I spot a gap in the crowd and try to elbow my way toward it, but I can't penetrate the mass of bodies around me.
Make yourself small, tiny. Disappear. If you disappear, you can breathe.
My skin prickles, and I push forward again. The tribesmen I shove past look around, strangely bewildered. I'm able to get through them easily.
Elias, come on!
Liar, he swivels, staring into the crowd, pushing in the wrong direction.
Here! Elias!
He swings toward me, but doesn't seem to see me, and he grabs his head. Skies! The poison again? He scrambles for his pocket and takes a swig of the tellus. I push back through the tribesmen until I am right beside him.
Elias, I'm right here.
I take his arm, and he practically jumps out of his skin. He wags his head like he did when he was first poisoned, and looks me over.
Of course you are, he says. Afia. Where's Afia?
He cuts through the crowd, trying to catch up to the tribeswoman, whom I can't see anywhere.
What in the skies are you two doing?
Afia appears beside us and grabs my arm.
I've been looking all over for you. Stay with me. We have to get out of here.
I follow her, but Elias's attention jerks to something farther down in the bowl, and he stops short, staring over the surging crowd.
Afia, he says, where's the Ner caravan?
North section of the depot, she says. A couple of caravans over from Tribe Scythe.
Liar, can you stay with Afia?
Of course, but...
She's seen me.
He releases me, and as he pushes into the crowd, Aquila's familiar silver-blonde crown braid flashes in the sun a few dozen yards away.
I'll distract her, Elias says. Get to the caravan. I'll meet you there.
Elias, damn it!
But he's already gone.
Chapter 21 Elias When my eyes meet Helene's across the crowd, when I see the shock roll across her silver face as she recognizes me, I don't think, nor do I question. I just move, delivering Lyra into Afia's arms and then cutting through the crowd, away from them and toward hell. I need to draw her attention from Afia and Tribe Nur. If she identifies them as the tribe that's taken Lyra and me in, 1,000 riots won't stop her from eventually hunting us down. I'll distract her, then I'll disappear into the crowd. I think of her face back in my quarters at Blackcliff, fighting to hold in her hurt as she met my eyes.
After this, I belong to him. Remember, Elias, after this, we're enemies.
The chaos of the riot is deafening, but within that cacophony, I witness a strange, hidden order. For all the shouting, yelling, and screaming, I see no abandoned children, no trampled bodies, no quickly deserted belongings, none of the hallmarks of true chaos. Mamie and Afia have this riot planned down to the minute. Distantly, the drums of the Marshal Garrison thud, calling for backup. Hell must have sent a message to the drum tower. But if she wants soldiers here to quell the riot, then she can't maintain the cordon around the city. Which was, I now understand, Afia and Mamie's plan all along. Once the cordon around the wagons is lifted, Afia can get us safely hidden and out of the city. Our caravan will be one of hundreds leaving Nur. Helene entered the theater near the stage, and has now pressed halfway toward me. But she is alone, an armored, silver-faced island in a roiling sea of human rage. Dex has disappeared, and the other mask who entered the amphitheater with her, Harper, heads out one of the exits. The fact that she's alone doesn't deter Helene. She makes for me with a single-minded determination that is as familiar to me as my own skin. She shoves forward, her body gathering an inexorable force that propels her through the tribesmen like a shark toward bloodied prey. But the crowd closes in. Fingers grasp at her cloak, her neck. Someone puts a hand on her shoulder, and she pivots, grabs it, and snaps it in one breath. I can almost hear her logic.
It's faster to keep going than to fight them all.
Her movement is hampered, slowed, stopped. It is only then that I hear the hiss of her Sims whipping out of their scabbards. She is the Bloodshrike now, a grim-faced knight of the Empire, her blades carving a path forward in sprays of blood. I glance over my shoulder and catch Lyra and Afia pushing through one of the gates and out of the theater. When I look back at Helene, her Sims fly, but not fast enough. Multiple tribesmen attack, dozens. Too many for her to counter at once. The crowd has taken on a life of its own and does not fear her blades. I see the moment she realizes it. The moment she knows that no matter how swift she is, there are too many for her to fight. She meets my stare, her fury blazing. Then she drops, pulled down by those around her. Again, my body moves before my mind knows what I am doing. I pull a cloak off a woman in the crowd, she doesn't even notice its absence, and muscle my way through, my only thought to get to Helene, to pull her out, to keep her from being beaten or trampled to death.
Why, Elias? She's your enemy now.
The thought sickens me. She was my best friend. I can't just throw that away. I drop. Lunge forward through robes, legs, and weaponry, and pull the cloak around Helene. One arm goes around her waist, and I use the other to cut the straps on her Sims and her brace of throwing knives. Her weapons drop, and when she coughs, blood spatters her armor. I bear her weight as her legs fight to find their strength. We are through one ring of tribesmen, then another, until we are moving quickly away from where the rioters are still howling for her blood.
Leave her, Elias. Get her clear and leave her. Distraction complete. You're done.
But if I leave her now, and any other tribesmen attack while she's hardly able to walk, then I might as well not have pulled her out. I keep walking, holding her up until she gets her feet. She coughs and shakes, and I know that all of her instincts are ordering her to draw breath, to calm her heartbeat, to survive. Which is perhaps why she doesn't resist me, until we are through one of the theater's gates and halfway down an empty, dusty alley beyond. She finally shoves me away and rips the cloak off. 100 emotions flash across her face as she casts the cloak on the ground. Things no one else would ever see or know but me. That alone extinguishes the days and weeks and miles dividing us. Her hands shake, and I notice the ring on her finger. Bloodshrike! Don't! She shakes her head. Don't call me that! Everyone calls me that. But not you. She looks me up and down. You look terrible. Rough few weeks. I spot the scars on her hands and arms, the faded bruises on her face. I gave her to a blackguard for interrogation, the commandant said. And she survived, I think to myself. Now get out of here before she kills you. I step back, but her arm shoots out, her hand cool on my wrist, her grip like iron. I find her pale gaze, startled at the mess of emotions laid bare there. Leave, Elias. I yank my arm away, and as I do, the doors in her eyes, opened just a moment ago, slam shut. Her expression flattens. She reaches back for her weapons, non-existent, since I relieved her of them. I see her soften her knees, preparing to lunge at me. You are under arrest! She leaps, and I sidestep her. By order of the... You're not going to arrest me! I wrap an arm around her waist and try to fling her a few yards away. The hell's I'm not! She jabs her elbow deep into my stomach. I double over, and she spins out of my grasp. Her knee flies up toward my forehead. I catch it, shove it back, and stun her with an elbow to the face. I just saved your life, hell! I would have gotten out of there without you! Oof! I bull rush her, and her breath huffs out when her back hits the wall. I pin her legs between my thighs to keep her from crippling me, and I put a blade to her throat before she can knock me senseless with a headbutt. Damn you! She tries to twist free, and I press the blade closer. Her eyes drop to my mouth, her breath coming short and fast. She looks away with a shudder. They were crushing you, I say. You'd have been trampled. That changes nothing. I have orders from Marcus to bring you to Antium for a public execution. Now it's my turn to snort. Why in the 10 hells haven't you assassinated him yet? You'd be doing the world a favor. Oh, piss off! She spits at me. I wouldn't expect you to understand. A thudding rumbles the streets beyond the alley. The rhythmic footsteps of approaching martial soldiers. Reinforcements to quell the riot. Helene uses my moment of distraction to try to force her way out of my grip. I can't hold her for much longer. Not if I want to get the hell out of here without half a martial legion on my tail. Damn it! I have to leave, I say into her ear. But I don't want to hurt you. I'm so sick of hurting people. I feel the soft flutter of her eyelashes against my cheek, the steady rise and fall of her breath against my chest. Elias, she whispers my name, one word full of wanting. I pull back. Her eyes, blue as smoke a second ago, darken to a stormy violet. Loving you is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. She said those words to me weeks ago. Witnessing the devastation in her now, and knowing that yet again I am the cause, makes me hate myself.
I'm going to let go of you, I say. If you try to take me down, so be it. But before I do, I want to say something, because we both know